You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
What is going on, Nash? Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It is Wednesday, October 9th, 2024, and I'm your good buddy, Joe O'Brien.
And I'm Troy. I should be in a pool right now, LaValle.
Oh, baby. Welcome back to our weekly medical check-in on the ailments of the founders of the Glass Cannon Network, founders and friends of the Glass Cannon Network. Troy, what's the latest medical update on you?
Dude, it's so sad we started this company so late in life. That like now,
I know. Could you imagine if we had launched at like 22 years old?
Oh, my God. We would have gotten so many people pregnant.
I mean, right now, we'd be 30.
Yeah, we'd be 30. Instead, these poor people listening have to listen to all of us, like, slowly die.
Yeah, they're like, listening to
best
us.
Best case scenario, someone retires first, but there's a good chance someone dies on air. dude, I was supposed to fly to LA today. I was going to spend 2 days in LA. I had meetings with clients. I had lunches with agents, dinners with clients, this stuff, all this stuff, going to see some studios and whatnot. And then I had this like hotel all set up in West Hollywood. I was going to like, I had it all set. I was going to like land. I was going to go to lunch with our agent. I was going to come back, sit by the pool, have a couple cocktails, then have dinner with a client. Then I was going to see Jared's comedy show. Like I had it all planned out and I can't fucking do it. I got to go straight to Portland now. But good news. I had my MRI yesterday and I do have a herniation, but doesn't require surgery. They just got to get me a shot back there. But they can't do it till next week because American healthcare is...
So living in constant...
nonsense. Pain. Yeah, it's brutal, dude. I was saying to you before the break, like the heart of the break, this is the problem. The hardest part about this, beyond the pain, is I'm sleeping less than 2 hours a night and have been for 2 weeks. And it's not like I'm tired enough during the day or have time to even take a nap. So I just feel, I feel crazy. I haven't shaved because I can't stand up long enough to shave. I want to shave, but I'm sitting down to piss. I'm sitting down to shower like a child, just like. It's brutal. So having to go do cross country with this is gonna be rough. I was hoping they could just fucking. I was like, awesome, let's get that shot today. They're like, oh no. You have to have 7 or 8 phone calls, and then they can see you.
Right.
Maybe
we can't
next
give
week.
You instant pain relief. That would be illegal. We have to go through several steps of red tape to make sure that you're not a pain killer addict.
I know.
Of some kind.
I know. Yeah, there's some junkie. Like, even if they gave me Oxy, I wouldn't take it because I don't want to be like the Oxy guy. Plus, like, I like to have a couple cocktails. I don't want to mix that shit. But none of the pain stuff works because it's nerve pain. You know what I mean? And I've tried everything they gave me and nothing's working. So just got to suck it up. I'm hoping that like the mental awareness of knowing that it's not a surgery and that like there is an end in sight is enough to kind of get me through it. But, man, Portland, LA is going to be in for a treat. You're going to see a rare fucking dumb ass can't speak Troy.
You're going to see a, if you're not sleeping at all, you're going to be crazy up there on stage. By the way, if you didn't know already, it's show week. It's show week, ladies and gentlemen. Portland and LA this week that Troy is going to do on basically no sleep and jet lagged and in constant chronic pain. So, like, imagine what you're going to do to the player characters. You're going to be so mean.
I got
to
take it out on somebody.
Right.
I know. But, life throws you curveballs, man. But if you want to make it in the major leagues, you got to learn how to hit a curve. Otherwise,
you got
to
play. You know what they say? I mean, you know what they say in pro football? It's like when people start talking about injuries and getting hurt or whatever, a lot of those ex-players will just be like, you are always hurt. You play every game hurt. Right. Like, everybody is hurt on that field, which is just wild. And so, yeah, you're going to just have to power through it, man. You have to
power through. It's going to be fun. And these are big shows. I teased it on Instagram Live the other day. Like, these are big shows. We're setting up. This is show 97 and 98. I'm hoping that during the Extra Life marathon, we do a little Strange Aeons. We've talked about that. That would be 99. And then 100 will be Philly. So, like, I'm setting it up. I'm setting up these pins for something big. I just hope that I don't have a nervous breakdown live on stage.
That would be rough. That would be rough. So, yeah, we're going to go through really very light news week this week with us leaving town to do the shows. That's the big thing on our plate. We'll go through episode 54 of Campaign 2, talk through that as we combine with We Are Stupid. What a chunky, interesting encounter that we're going to delve into today. And then, of course, we'll get some listener mail in. So it's going to be a great one. The only other piece of news that I can think of is... and you know what? I honestly don't even know if this is happening with your situation. Are you going to do New York Comic Con? New York Comic Con is
bet
like
your sweet ass. I will, dude. Yeah, it wouldn't baby. Be a New York Comic Con if I wasn't limping to the stage and then leaving immediately after. But that's a week from Friday. I'm pretty optimistic that something will happen. By
you know,
then.
1 year ago, you did the exact literal same thing.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it wouldn't be New York Comic Con if I wasn't limping to the
stage.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
dude, that was the fucking worst and just stupid, but this is how I do things. Like, I remember the cab ride was so bumpy and I just had surgery like 3 days before. It was awful. Then I get out and the walk from the door to the performance center, a normal person would take 5 minutes. It took me 40 minutes. And CJ, our sound engineer, I was like, where do I meet you to get my badge? And he just went to the door that made the most sense. And it was the furthest door from the thing. So I walked all the way down, only to walk all the way back. It was awful. And I remember I leaned to you after the show. I was like, great show. I'm leaving now. And I just picked up my chair, tapped a couple people on the back, and slowly made my way out, tried to call an Uber. I mean, it was just awful. But looks like it'll be the same thing again. I just got confirmation. Nick Lowe will be joining us on stage.
Nice,
I was texting with him yesterday. So it's going to be Skid, Matthew, myself, Sydney, Nick Lowe, maybe somebody else. But you, you're a busy bean. You're not going to be
not
around.
Not I. It is my anniversary. And so we had some travel plans booked before Marvel came to us. And so, yeah, I was like, shit, I'm out. But I think you're going to get some spectacular replacements in terms of Nick and maybe somebody else. That would be amazing. Dude, Marvel shows are – I hate missing a Marvel show. They're always so fun.
I know.
It's so easy. It's so fun.
It should be fun. I have no interest in Comic-Con, but I like performing. Remind me to tell you something really funny after Cannon Fodder that I almost just said on air, but then I realized in my broken state I shouldn't say aloud. But it's really funny, and I want to tell you. So it'd be like, okay. After this, be like, what was that funny thing you wanted to say? And you're going
to
laugh
say?
So hard. It's not even inappropriate so much. It's just like not something I should talk about, but you're going to love it. And I don't want to forget, so remind me.
So you heard it here first. If you are in the New York area or you're already going to New York Comic Con, when is the show? It is Friday
October at 2:30 p.m.
At 3 o'clock, somewhere in that range.
2:30. Can you not hear me? I said 2:30.
It's just not 2:30 in our calendar, so I think that you're crazy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No reason
so
to raise
either
your
voice. You said it wrong or you put it in wrong.
Let me see. 2:45.
2:45.
It's on the calendar. It's 2:45, Marvel One Shot. And also, we got a 2-hour slot this year. So it's going to be a 2-hour jamboree at the Javits.
And you'll get to see Troy walk in with a cane, probably.
Maybe.
Just barely able to walk. It's crazy. You look like the oldest man.
So I bought a cane. I bought a cane like a fucking, like Mr. Peanut. And I had to go get my MRI yesterday, and the kids were outside. And there were a bunch of acorns on the ground that Dash had collected. And so I was like, I was trying to make him laugh. And I was like, hey, watch Dad with his new cane. I threw the acorn up and like swung my cane to try and hit a home run. So I catch this dinger. And the little fucking thing on the end of the cane went flying and I lost it. Now I can't use the cane. It either went into the neighbor's yard or the bushes. And I got this cane that I already don't want to use. And now I can't use it. My wife and I are out there like looking through the bushes, looking over the neighbor's fence. And like, hey. What are you looking in our yard for? I'm like, I'm trying to find my cane thing.
My cane rubber. I need my cane rubber.
Have you ever had an MRI?
Yeah.
Like a in the tube? fucking thing. Were you in a position where laying down was okay?
Yes.
Okay. So I imagine if you're claustrophobic, it has to be the worst possible thing to do in the world.
Yeah, I thought it would freak me out more than it did, but I did okay. I just kept breathing and like went into a meditative state.
Yeah, I'm good with that stuff. I'm a fidget. I'm a natural fidget. But like the problem is I can't lay flat. Like I have to have certain things happening right now to be comfortable. So they gave me the little thing to like squeeze. And so it was adding to my anxiety because I was just like, so much pain. She's like, you're moving. We're not, the doctors aren't going to be able to see this. I'm like, it's because I'm shaking with pain trying to sit still. And at one point I was like, gotta get me out. And when you come out, God, they have like a fake picture of the sky on the ceiling so that like you have like a moment of like, all right, I'm free. And it was awful. I thought it was going to last hours. It was like 15 minutes, but they had country music in my ears, which was nice. I was just singing along to that. But what a horrible, horrible experience. I see why they don't just say, oh, just give them an MRI, because they don't want to subject anyone to that.
Yeah, I mean, they have better ones these days. In some hospitals, I know they have one like standing MRIs and stuff like that. But yeah, like,
I can't stand
it's just very – I'm surprised at this point that the technology isn't more like, oh, boop, a quick x-ray, MRI, right? Done. You know what I mean? I don't know why it has to be so involved still.
I know. It seems ancient, right? It seems like
it does.
They're going to leech you afterwards as well. Let's do the leeching.
All right. Let's talk about Glass Cannon Podcast Campaign 2, Episode 54.
All right.
Tickled Pink. Great title, by the way.
You like that
good
one?
Title. Well, yeah. I mean, considering what happens in the episode, what an ep. Tickled Pink. It's such a disturbing image when you add, when you put it in the title and then you know where that comes from, where it happens. All right. So here's what I want to do. I want to go through, talk about some of the highlights in the app, and then also combine it with We Are Stupid, because it's all an encounter. You know, it's really the whole thing. So we're just going to kind of mix this all together today as we figure out how stupid we are. I mean, there's actually only a couple minor things at best. For the most part, Professor Eric is really offering opinions more than anything, because this was a wacky combat with a lot of wacky situations. So, first of all, what an encounter. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Talk to me about when you first read this thing, and it's talking about splashing between worlds, stuff like that. So, I mean, we cliffhanger on a third world. Like, but we still haven't done that. We only did two in the episode, but there's at least three, which is what a cool encounter design. Talk to me about reading that for the first time. What was going through your head?
I have like two feelings when I read that. First, I'm like, man, it's going to be tough to run. And then my second thought is like, what a cool set piece encounter. And something we've never really seen across the network. I love like sort of mega encounters, and that's what you're in the middle of. But, yeah, I was like, this is just, it's so cinematic. It's so glass cannon. So to see it come out and to see it work with Foundry's integration as well was really, really cool.
Yeah,
and
I'm so glad. Flicker, change like the entire landscape around was so cool on Foundry. And yeah, in general, just, I think we can look back maybe a few FODs from now and just kind of assess the whole thing, because we're in the middle of it right now, so we kind of can't go into too much detail, but we will actually, we can go into specific detail, and that's what I want to do. What we can't do is look at the encounter as a macro until it's complete, so we will do that eventually, but for now let's get into the nitty-gritty of the ep. First off, we travel to a planet that seems like Skid said it. What is it? The one with the Ahsoki on it.
Akitan.
He said it right away. It's Akitan. And we run into this rat folk like scavenger, which is just so cool. And you know, that begins the first encounter. And that'll bring us to our first We Are Stupid, which is Buggles casting Charm on the creature.
Big point of contention. Always is.
So there are two. If you say the big point of contention, I'm going to guess what you're talking about is how you handled the charmed creature. Is that the point of contention?
I think so, yeah. And also just charm in general. Charm in combat, charm, period. It always invites sort of controversy, you know?
Yes.
Friction.
Agreed.
Friction between players and GMs, and in our case, between listeners and GMs.
we won't name the GMs.
I think it's a good discussion, you know, because we don't We don't say, hold on, stop recording. Let's figure this out. We really try and make it feel like a game in which, like, I listen and I'm making a call on the fly. And, you know, sometimes I go back and I'm like, well, you know what? Maybe I'd do that differently. And sometimes not. And I don't know how I feel about this. I've given it a little thought, but you hit pepper me. What do you got?
This is just a purely technical thing regarding Charm, which we didn't bring up. I don't know if Skid knew or mentioned it, but Charm has the incapacitation trait.
Yes.
And so we also don't know for certain what rank Skid cast it at. I would assume it's cast at rank one, which is what Professor Eric assumes. I'm not sure if that is because there's you can't heighten it until beyond, like, I don't know if they're, yeah. So he casted it at rank one because the next heightened is rank four, for Charm. So, right. you know, it's cast at rank one, and a rank one Charm, up against that Usoki is going to suffer from the incapacitation trait, according right. to,
so I'm looking at Professor the Usoki Eric. Here. The Usoki is creature four. Yeah. So that, we,
yeah. So he says rank one would only affect up to creature level two without having the degree of success reduced by one. So Charm on that success or on that failure would have been a success. So right. ultimately, if we were playing it by the book, he would have saved on it anyway. But yeah, right. I mean, as
so
far
my
as
the, gut, my gut way of playing it was right.
What we should have done.
What we should have done anyways. Because the thing is like the way I'm playing it is like this shouldn't be an encounter ender for an encounter of this magnitude. Now, if we had known the incapacitation, it's built in so that it isn't, so that players can't do that. But to me, I was like, all right, well, the middle ground for this is like just the text of the spell. It is friendly to you, but it is still very worried about who all these other people are. So let's do a diplomacy check. And then, you know, he failed the diplomacy check. So then he's still wary. And then he's going to attack. And then once you attack him back, you know, now he gets a plus four to his save against and all this other stuff. I don't know. And then you come in with calm emotions. It gets very hairy. You know, what I don't, for me, I'm just trying to like create a good battle here within the rules of the game. And I think it worked out well, but I know Skid was disappointed initially because in Skid's mind, it's like, you're charmed. That's the end of the encounter. It's a social encounter now. And I don't think that is the intention of the spell. But you could play it either way. For me, in this type of encounter, let's take incapacitation out of it without even having that in there. In this type of encounter, the stakes need to be raised. And so it shouldn't just be like, oh, you did it. You tricked the encounter. You beat the encounter. To me, it should be like, all right, well, you've made a huge inroad here at escaping, at not turning this into a knockdown dragout. But there's still a couple other things you're going to have to do if you want to get out of this. And the way it worked out is just slowing it down a little bit, sowing that seed of doubt, ended up having you guys come in, close, restrain it, tie it up. So I think it worked out narratively, but I can understand people being like, nope, he failed
the
charm.
Calm?
That should be
now,
it.
Calm failed, but I mean, I think Calm specifically is an encounter ender in this thing. Like if he succeeds, right. If he fails on that save, I really don't know how you argue that he fights. I mean, he doesn't.
He didn't though, right?
No, he succeeded.
The so, gecko like, failed and the gecko, I took him out of the combat.
Right.
It was yeah. just like when you did to the leshy fungus, the fungus leshies. I just, yeah. that was the end of the encounter. Yeah. So yeah, maybe. Does that have incapacitation, calm emotions?
No. I don't believe so. Yeah, because
I'm looking right now. It does have it. Oh, Calm does. The legacy version is Calm Emotions. Yeah, Calm, they both have
it. Oh, it does have incapacitation. Okay.
Yeah.
See, but it's so rank two spell, so it would not have had one degree higher.
He's a creature four.
Rank two spells will hit creature four.
Ah, okay.
It's like divide by half and increase and round up.
Interesting.
Is okay. sort of how it works with spell ranks versus creature rank.
Yeah.
So that's what Professor Eric was saying. Was like, now rank two, charm is rank two, or calm is rank two, so that would have worked, but the die roll failed.
Yeah.
The die roll succeeded.
I will say, as written, there is an opening for this to be a social thing.
Yeah, that seemed like it.
Yeah, so like I'm just trying to keep the tension up long enough because I know what's about to happen. If I can take you guys down a couple
hit points.
But can't
you also just immediately transport us the second the charm is successful? Just be like, he's like, oh, hello, friends. Whoa. And then you teleport. Like,
for
why
sure,
do you have
that
to
would
wait
have
for
been an option. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You could have done that. I could have done that. But I don't know. I just felt like I'm looking at the wording of the spell. It's friendly to you. He's got this salvage that he's all psyched about. Five people show up. This guy says, we're not. Well, what are you talking about? Rolls a diplomacy check and then fails. Now he's still confused and he goes right to fight or flight and starts attacking you. Mm-hmm. Now, if you guys don't attack him but continue diplomacy, you're getting out of that encounter without taking without any fight whatsoever. But yeah. You guys took the offensive and that's
– And that
that's
breaks gonna, the spell, yeah, basically. Yeah. I also hate the wording. I've always hated these. The wording and charm of – sorry, I'm going to bring it back up here. The wording and charm of – if you use hostile actions against the target, the spell ends. Like, this drives me insane when players argue that that just means you, the caster. It's like, okay, so while my friends are beating him to death, he's not going to fight back because I'm not using hostile actions against him. It's like, I mean, the real problem, I think, is the wording, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I think that
what
it
is
needs
a hostile
to be,
action? I mean,
yeah, well, it's also like, if you are an ally, uses hostile actions against the target, it, you know, the spell immediately ends. It's just not meant to be an end a combat kind of spell, in my opinion. I think it is more meant to be an infiltration and social spell. You know, that's really where it shines.
Right.
And
or
so
if you're up against like a mob of lower characters and you can like take a couple of them out with charm early on and then just be able to, I don't know, like with Razzmatazz, you know what I mean? That worked perfectly. But that was one charm or whatever.
Yeah, but
casts.
It's also like,
it's not dominate. You know what I mean? Like it's not
right.
Dumb.
Well, there's
like,
two layers to it to me. There is the layer of, it is an encounter preventer, right? So like if you get it off in the first round, it could prevent a fight as long as none of your allies attack and then it doesn't attack. I see that. That's totally cool. Of what would have otherwise been a fight. Or it's used to, you know, get by somebody in a social sort of situation or an infiltration kind of situation. I just don't like someone fighting you to the death. Your allies flanking it, stabbing it to death, and then you cast charm and it just stops fighting. It just seems a little odd to me, or at least it would have to be rolled at a penalty. And it does have the incapacitation trait, which is kind of built, that's kind of built in a way, to make it, because incapacitation, you know, I mean, it says it right in the text. An ability with this trait can take a character completely out of the fight. Or even kill them. That's why they put the incapacitation trait in there, because that one failure. Anyway, I didn't mean to spend all day on.
No, I think it's important though, because these spells come up a lot in people's home games, and I think every table is going to handle it differently. I know Skid was initially disappointed with it, but like I also had the foresight of knowing that like this part of the encounter is rather trivial. All I'm trying to do is ramp up the tension. Like if I throw one bomb at you, great. If you guys succeed without me hurting you at all. That's great too. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with you guys skipping encounters. It makes the adventure path go faster. My goal is to ramp tension here and to sow seeds of doubt, and having it just flip on a dime and have turn into a conversation. That is one way I could have went. You've got three actions. Let's try diplomacy. Okay. Now there's a bit of, uneasiness here. Where is this going to go? And I don't know. It ended up being a fun beginning of the encounter, but
right. I'm just picturing like you coming up to me on the street, me being like, Troy, old buddy, and you have four friends that have machine guns pointed at my face. Right. You know what I mean? And I'm just like, what's going on here? Right. I don't like. You're like, no, we got you, man. But they're like,
you seem
wildly
cool.
Pointing a gun at me.
But who are these casters behind you with swords?
No, I don't know. There's. I don't know. I think the bigger question that it brings up, and I hate to keep harping on it, but
no, it's important though.
And it's a tricky one, is like addressing a situation as a GM where not you have something planned and you want it to go this way, where you want to show the entire party a great time. And part of that is ramping up tension, action, all the characters getting to do stuff. And then one character does something that instantly ends it. It can be very jarring for a GM, and it can be frustrating because you, not because you had a plan for X, Y, or Z, but because let's say you had a plan for everyone to have fun, and maybe several of the party would not think it's awesome to just immediately end an encounter without them ever getting an action. So it's a tricky middle ground that you have to navigate carefully as a GM, knowing your players, knowing the situation. So, anyway, ramping tension is a good thing, and we'll come up on that a little bit more later. Let's keep it going. It's just really fun because then we teleport out of there and end up, I don't know where, some flesh world plane, whatever, and the Night Gaunt. And this is amazing to me. For those, and I know a lot of our listeners probably don't listen to all of Strange Aeons, but to me, I could feel it in the moment, and as soon as it targeted Ramius, I kept thinking, there's a term for you non-sports fans out there and you non-NFL fans. There's a term in the world of the NFL, the revenge game. It's whenever a player is returning to play against a team that they played on before. Maybe there was a dispute. The contract didn't work out.
Stephon Diggs.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Stephon Diggs had a revenge game this past weekend. And it seems like those players get up a little extra for it. They seem to like find another gear or do something a little extra to just take it to the people that had screwed them over before. Or it could just not be personal. It could be, you know, one team beat the shit out of another team, and then the next time they play, it's a revenge game for that team that got blown out. So in this case, it's the revenge game for the gauntlet, for the Night Gaunt. The Night Gaunt who grabbed a character in Strange Aeons, raised them all the way up into the air, attempted to kill them, and then was unsuccessful at the last moment. We really thought a death was coming down the pike there in Washington, D.C. in 2020. I think it was the second to last show before COVID, something like that. I believe that's when it hit.
Was that the cliffhanger of the show, or was that the beginning of the show?
That was just in the middle of the show. I don't think it was even a cliffhanger.
Oh, okay. I thought it was.
Oh, wait, no, I think maybe the start of the show was that, because it was on the poster. It was on the poster. I remember it was on the poster. Maybe
if it was
the next
on the
show,
poster, it had to have been the start of the show because I wouldn't have foreshadowed
I guess
that.
So. I guess so. Because we were trying to figure out a way. Anyway.
And she survived. But it was.
And she survived. Yeah. So now it gets Ramius up in the air, tickled pink, scratches his back open, kills Ramius. He's dying, bleeding out up in the air. Everybody's trying creative stuff. So let's get into some We Are Stupid. First of all, per Professor Eric, there is no default way by the book to progress a creature from grabbed to restrained. You typically need an item like manacles. Otherwise, you're just rolling for a critical success. It's the same grab roll over and over, but you need to crit in order to restrain them. He says tripping them and then grabbing is often a simpler way to accomplish a similar goal. Since they are grabbed, they are immobilized and can't stand up until they break the grab. So, let's get on to Matthew getting clever with the mirror flicker to flicker up and grab Brother Ramius. Professor Eric's take on this. For Barnes' attempt to grab Brother Ramius, I think you got to a good place. Period. That's it.
Dude, Sydney's Dimensional Assault last week. Like, it's just fun. And
right now, let's get into Sydney's Dimensional Assault. Professor Eric does not like this one.
That this week or was that 2 weeks ago?
That was this week.
Oh, okay, so now, these both things happened. Interesting.
Both things happened. Now, the reason that I bring this up is, and I think the reason that Professor Eric brought it up is not that having her go up with Dimensional Assault to do attacks or whatever is a bad thing. No, on the contrary, he thinks it's great. His opinion is, we handled the mirror's reflection and the Dimensional Assault inconsistently. He felt like Barnes's ability to grab or grapple as part of that action that we allowed should have meant we also allowed Sydney to do a full spell strike up in the air while she was up there. His point just being, I don't really see the rationale behind why that quote unquote takes longer. It's so fast.
It about action economy? The spell strike was a second action, whereas, or a third action, right? She had Dimensional Assault, strike, and then this. Whereas he was mirror grapple.
Right, but that's, it's still a separate action. Like, the dimensional assault
right, but
and
I allowed
attack,
her the first attack. I allowed her to do the thing and do an action, which was the attack. Spellstrike was
right,
another.
Barnes's thing is one action.
Right.
Then the second action is grapple.
But his dimensional assault, that includes the
one
hit.
Action, yeah. Includes the attack.
Okay, then, so that's where it's inconsistent, yeah.
Right, and so he felt it was a little bit inconsistent. However, he does say there's something we can look at here in the books to say why this is, you know, you would be being very kind here with this, because he says, look at, this is why I love Professor Erica's knowledge of the whole scope of the game. He's like, for this, we can look to the level 8 barbarian feat, Sudden Leap, which allows you, it's a two-action ability that allows you to leap, high jump, or long jump and take an attack at any point during that jump. Mm. So like in the middle of a jump or whatever. So he's saying, I mean, look, this is a level 8 feat that is like hard to get. So it stands to reason that offering any of this is generous. So why offer the grab and not offer the spell strike, yeah. Especially when in his final point is, the spell strike had the map. So, like, you're already going to take a big penalty. You know, that's rule fair. Of cool, just kind of let it happen. Anyway, that was his analysis of this very cool. Fringy gray area case. But he liked that you just said, yeah, you should be able to do it. It's awesome.
Isn't it cool? One of the things I love about 2E is oftentimes you'll find the answer to the question in, like, a feat from something else or a spell mm-hmm. from something else, like where it's not clearly spelled out. The existence of something else shows you like, wow, if you had to pay to get that feat to do that, that means you don't get to do that at second level because it exists as a feat at a higher level. That's really cool.
Right. And let's go right back there. Same thing. And this is amazing. The deep cuts this week from Professor Eric are awesome. Another huge, amazing question. All right. So let's fast forward. Brother Ramius is brought back up enough to just be conscious while up in the air. Mm-hmm. And Buggles lands the killing blow on the Night Gun. Boom! Thus releasing Brother Ramius. So the question becomes, remember we were talking about, can somebody prevent some damage to Brother Ramius by... whatever the word is, breaking his fall, right? By breaking his fall in some way. So he says, on the falling damage, voluntarily putting yourself in harm's way, discussion to break someone's fall. Also possibly relevant on the earlier Barnes grab against Ramius. There is a guideline / less a rule to precedent. Now, this is amazing. From the Gliminal's violent healing ability. This is a monster, a creature, a Gliminal. I could go all
into... The fuck does he know this?
Dude, it's insane. I could go all into detail about how this creature works. It's a wild, insane monster. But basically, it has this emanating positive energy that is so intense that it heals you. Pardon me. It heals you. Just from like being around it or hitting it or whatever. If it heals you over your max, you gain temporary hit points over your max.
Wow.
And if you ever have temporary hit points equal to your maximum, so basically if you double your hit points with exposure to this positive energy, you explode in a supernova of positive energy and permanently die.
Wow.
So there's an interesting thing within this creature that there's an interesting mechanic within this creature that basically says there are times you may want to be hit by this creature. You may become a willing target where you wouldn't otherwise. He says this happens more often than you would think across these games. There are moments when someone will willingly fail a save, right? Or willingly get hit by an ally in order for some unforeseen thing that we can't think of right now to happen. You may want it to happen. Well, through this Gliminal violent healing approach, this is an actual written rule. It says, quote, there aren't default rules for a creature choosing to be hit. This is right from the book. But you can allow, and this is, you know, across the 2E system, it basically is what he's saying. You can allow an ally to improve their outcome by one degree of success against a willing target, or allow the target to worsen the result of their saving throw by one step. And that sounds confusing, but the basic premise is if you want to hit your ally, it stands, you know, Professor Eric said it really well. Basically, you can choose to make things worse for a willing target, but you still have to roll. There's definitely times when you want to hit, but not crit an ally, or fail, but not crit fail against something. So I think this guideline strikes a decent balance between still requiring a roll, not making it automatic, but letting the party try some non-standard solutions. So basically, if you become a willing target to something, the attack roll, you can choose to increase it by one step. So if the roll would have missed, you can choose to make it a hit. If it was a hit, you can choose to not make it a crit, but it is a hit, right? And then the reverse, if you want to be a willing failure on a saving throw, you can reduce that by one step, or you can reduce a success to a failure, or just take the failure. Now, what's interesting is, even with that, there's the risk if you roll a critical fail. Like, then you critically fail. So there is risk in becoming willing, but you do have that the degree of success you can have some control over, which I think is a fun mechanic.
So we started to talk about this on the episode because there's in the falling and falling damage section, falling on a creature. If you land on a creature, that creature must attempt a DC 15 reflex save. Intentionally aiming yourself to land on a creature after a long fall is almost impossible. So I should have just allowed Zephyr to do that. And on a critical success, it's DC 15. So if she had rolled a 25 on a reflex, you wouldn't have taken any damage and gone to a further state of dying by the rules of this. Because critical success, the creature takes no damage. Success, you both would take damage, which means your dying condition would go down and she would take damage. But it would have been worth the risk.
Right. But if she failed, you know, she could, by this rule, this guideline, it's not really a rule, but it's a guideline, she could choose to increase it to a success so that she takes damage she wants to take, right? Like, that's kind of the interesting idea there. Or she could choose to increase a success to a critical success, but she would have to roll a success first in order to have that option so that she could save Ramius by hurting herself, which is cool. I think it's really fun.
Right, because if you're landing, it's just depending on the square that you're in. But if you're willing yourself to catch, you can based on these guidelines, you can increase your level of success. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, that's heroic, right? But you still have to roll. How many things can you increase by in this
just
guideline?
Just one.
Right.
So if you roll. Critically fail, like best you can do is failure. So like you still have to roll the die. There still is some risk associated.
I think it's
a great little mechanic. It's kind
super
of like
heroic too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Making that choice after seeing the roll. Anyway, I think it's very cool. All right. Last thing is, this is just a comment to you from Professor Eric. We don't have to go into details here. He says that there's some behind the scenes stuff, like he'd rather not like talk. Well, I don't even think there's behind the scenes stuff. I think it's just he's looking at deep mechanical things within how precarious Brother Ramius's position was. He said the double fly up of the Night Gaunt in round 4, he felt, in his opinion, was a masterpiece of raising tension, but actually being nice to Brother Ramius in a way, right? So you raise tension, but you don't do the thing that just could automatically permanently kill him. You know what I mean? Like, so it's kind of taking your foot off the gas while also increasing the tension and the intensity of the combat. He just said it was a masterpiece of raising tension.
Well, I appreciate that. What I was struggling with is like, I know I can hit you and do more damage. What I want to do though is raise you up higher because I know they're going to kill the Nikon. And so I want that fall to be brutal.
Yeah.
That's what I was struggling with. It's like, do damage now or have it just be that boom damage at the end.
Do damage now. It doesn't raise the tension.
Right.
It's devastating, but it doesn't necessarily raise tension. Whereas with the fly up, you can both raise tension and get the devastating later. You can get both the best of both worlds.
I wanted to say two things. One, I wanted to shout out Narky on our Discord. They're one of the cartographers that worked on Gatewalkers for Paizo and Foundry.
Oh, nice.
And they reached out to me in June of this year. I saw them like message me on Discord or like at me on Discord a while ago. And then I forgot who it was. So then I put something in our Discord in June being like, did someone say they worked on the maps? And then Narky reached out to me, and it was them who showed me how to do the macro that flipped through.
Oh, the cool.
So I wanted to shout them out. And second, about Night Gaunts, there, at the Caravanserai, there was a like multiple Night Gaunt encounter that you guys skipped. If you go to like the courtyard, if you remember when you come into the Caravanserai, to the left was, there was a Vorpal sword there that I think you guys got. Yeah,
that's the first thing I thought was the amazing weapon.
Right, and you didn't get that till you came back to the Caravanserai. Right. Because you guys went right and went around. If you go straight in, there's like four or six Night Gaunts in that courtyard. My God. But you never went in that way. And maybe you did later, like when you came back. But by then, I got rid of that encounter. But initially, I had like, I want to say it's either four or six Night Gaunts that are like hiding in the stables. And that encounter never happened.
Wow. So interesting. All right. Let's hear from the Nature Little Listener Mail. We're going to go international a dish today, Troy.
I'm going to pee my pants.
I have to pee too. Gotta get your brain up on it. Time on the mail. You gotta cue that shit. I want to thank Rusty from Melbourne, Australia, for writing in. Thank you, Rusty. His question today, how has radio influenced the form of the GCP? Over the years, I've heard scattered references to radio across the network, e.g. a few Howard Stern mentions in the early days, someone talking about things being good radio, quote unquote. For me, the Bant segments are a standout of the network and remind me of the best sports talk radio where talented personalities create a vibe of friends just hanging out. Please talk about whether radio was a conscious reference point for some Bant segments and any influence of radio on the show's style. Thank you, Rusty. I don't think you do much radio, you personally.
I grew up on radio, though.
You grew up on radio?
Okay. Yeah, people our age, they all did, right? Didn't everybody? Like, we listened to radio all the time on the ride to school. My high school was 25 minutes away, so, like, we would just listen to Kiss 108, Maddie in the Morning. And then,
shock jock kind of stuff is, like, always on air when we were kids.
Yeah, and I was always a big radio guy. Country music didn't come until later. Like, I used to love listening to Classic Rock Station in New York, and I knew the DJ because she would come into Caroline's on Broadway. So I got to know a lot of the radio DJs because a lot of the comics that came into town, they'd have to do radio in the morning and try and drum up sales for the weekend. So I got to meet some of them, and so that I'd listen to their radio station. But then I got serious when I got my the Highlander, and I'm like obsessed with the country music station is like huge for Sirius. All the country music stars talk about it. They write lyrics about the highway into their songs. And anyway, so radio certainly.
But does that channel have any, is it just, it's just all music all the time though, right? There's no talk show aspect.
It's mostly music, no commercials, but they do talk.
They chat a little bit. Do you learn stuff about artists or country music or upcoming shows banter on there?
Yeah. Like if Luke Combs is going to be in Nashville for the weekend, he'll be in the studio talking about the tour and asking him questions and stuff.
Okay. So all right. Cool.
Yeah. They do have one-on-ones. And then every Friday they have the Music Row Happy Hour at Margaritaville in Nashville where people line up at like 4 a.m. and then they go live at 5 p.m. for 4 p.m. for 3 hours where the guy's on stage bringing people up like, where were you from? Oh, we drove all the way from Manitoba. We listen to the Music Row Happy Hour every Friday. And like, we're here at a bachelor party.
I love shit like that. Shit like that.
But anyways, for me, the banter is like, that's the format of the show. Like I set a timer and it's like, I'm looking to try and get 10 minutes of banter. Sometimes we go long. Rarely do we go short, but like that to me is like that sets the mood of the show. That's the opening comic before the middler and the closer come out.
Only partially for the audience. It's also for this cast.
Yeah, to warm up the players.
Warm up the players, loosen everybody up, start to set a tone around the table before you start playing the game. Otherwise, you start playing the game in an undefined vibe. Right. And it can take a minute to get itself right. The banter helps warm everybody up.
I wonder, like, I've never listened to like other actual plays more than like a couple minutes here and there. I wonder if like other people just jump into a recap and start playing, or are they like playing within minutes? That seems crazy to me.
I don't think they do as much banter as we do. But But yeah, a lot of times people cut right to the chase. You know, they get right to the story, et cetera. And there's obviously differing opinions on that. But yeah, I think banter, I mean, for me, my style is enormously influenced by radio, Rusty, 100%. I grew up on radio. I grew up listening to sports talk radio. I still listen to sports talk radio almost every day. And so that sort of energy, that kind of vibe, I mean, I think that I bring it to cannon fodder. I think that there's a lot of, you could probably hear it, Rusty, in the way that I open shows and the way that I introduce segments and the way that I interview people. It's all based on my years and years and years of listening to radio shows and radio talk shows and stuff like that. So yeah, I would say very, very much so influenced by radio in all the various ways, and, you know, segmenting things and, you know, going to commercial breaks, how you go into a break, how you come out of a break, all that stuff. It's all kind of informed by radio as an example. So yes, very, insightful of you to point that out. And, I think that that's why I loved the podcasting, medium, you know, when we started doing it. Obviously the biggest part about it is it's the easiest thing to get into on a low budget. Like, you can just sort of like start doing it from home. 100%. But I also love the radio medium because you leave, it's like reading a book. You know, there's all that imagination that is left to the listener to fill in the blanks, to imagine what we look like in a given moment, or imagine the scene that we're describing. Or, you know, to me, it's better to, a lot of times, to listen to Brother Ramey, to me play Brother Ramius, than it is to watch me play Brother Ramius, right? Because you see that it's just me, and you see what kind of whatever stupid t-shirt I'm wearing, whatever, to take you out of it. In the audio only format, you can be totally transported if you want. You can picture that character and not picture me around the table. So yeah, I definitely love the imagination that the radio format offers. But I'll also say I like it a lot better in actual play and improv than I do in like audiobooks. I'm not a big audiobook guy, you know? So it's kind of hard to describe. Like, I love the aspect of how radio allows your imagination to unfold, but I don't have anything against audiobooks. I'm just saying I don't really listen to a lot of them. Whereas some of the guys, Skid, particularly Matthew, they do a lot of audiobook listening and they chat about it around the table before we start recording and stuff like that. And I've just never been that into it. I don't know. I have a hard time.
I got way into audiobooks this year because I'm trying to read 52
books.
That's
different, though. That's audio nonfiction.
Well, this is what I was going to say. It's like different. I would never listen to fiction audiobook. I only do nonfiction.
I've listened to a couple nonfiction audiobooks. I love them. They're great. But like fiction, I kind of struggle with. I've tried, and I kind of struggle with. So I don't know what it is about the improv nature of our storytelling, but I like it in its audio-only format. I think it's great. So yeah.
So, I don't know why it's making me think of this. Maybe just I'm delirious. But it's like a Seinfeld where Elaine's like, do you want to go I got tickets to – maybe it's Mel Torme or something. Do you want to go? And Jerry's like, watching a man sing, I don't know. And she's like, do you think that just going to watch a man sing makes you gay? And he goes, it doesn't help, or something like that. But it's kind of like
watching a man sing. I don't know.
I don't know. But there's this thing about like kind of an audiobook. It's like listening to someone like really get into it. It's just like, That's embarrassing. Let me create it in my own mind.
I don't know. I think that there's an aspect of it. Hey, really well done audiobooks. I guess they're great, but like, there is an aspect of it to me that feels like. Lay in bed and I'm going to tell you a story. And I'm like, I'm not a child. I can read a book. I don't need you to tell me a story. I know it's for people on the go and stuff like that. I get it. But that's why I love what we do. I think that we fill that gap nicely. It's not quite an audiobook. It's not quite a radio show. It's something in between. And that's why I enjoy it so much. That's going to wrap it up, guys. Thank you so much, as always, for coming out, listening to the FOD or watching the FOD on the tube. Appreciate you so much. Chunky episode. We did not talk about some macro things that are going on here because this encounter is not done yet. We have another week to go. So let's check it out Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, not live, but premiering on YouTube, on our YouTube channel. And we're live in Portland and L.A. this week. So check us out there. We're looking forward to seeing some of you folks. And we'll wrap it all up, tell you how it all went next week. So hopefully Troy makes it out there and back alive. If so, we'll see you next week on the FOD. Take it easy, everybody. Have a fantastic week and weekend.
See ya.
Bye. Do you like what you hear? Well, then it's time to make your membership official. You can start your 30-day free trial today and become an official member of The Nation at jointhenation.com with the promo code GCN30. That's jointhenation.com and use code GCN30. That's GCN30 to gain access to exclusive podcasts, ad-free episodes, and live streams you can't find anywhere else. Once again, it's jointhenation.com. Use code GCN30 at sign up to get your first 30 days for free. See what everybody else is talking about and join the Nash today.
Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vanta automates compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vanta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off.